Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio, and we are very happy to be joined today by Pamela Kerr, who is a refugee activist who has actually been active in the movement for more than 24 years. And she's actually been doing kind of a lot of reading and, I guess, analysis and looking into a lot of the kind of fine detail about this announcement by the Albanese government, this refugee policy announcement by the Albanese government. And we're going to go and attempt to kind of unpack some of the implications that are coming out of this. So good morning, Pamela.
Good morning to you too.
The first question, I guess, we want to kind of ask you is, I guess, can you give us a bit, just for our listeners, give us a bit of an overview of the ALP's recent announcement to grant more than 19,000 refugees the ability to apply for a permanent visa? And I guess, what is the significance of this announcement? And we'll obviously be going also into more kind of detail about who has been excluded. But yeah, we want to sort of hear about, I guess, a bit of an overview of what this announcement means in practical time terms.
Look, the advocacy movement for refugees obviously was advocating way before the election with the Labor Party, and the one concession that we got was an agreement that those people who were on temporary and shed visas would get permanent visas. This fits into Labor philosophy that if you live in Australia for a long time, you're working here, that you should have the right to Australian citizenship. Now, so they promised it, and 8 months later, they're starting the delivery. So that means that 19,000 people who currently are on TPVs, those temporary visas, and the SHEVs, are going to get what's called a resolution of status visa. There isn't actually a permanent visa, but what happens is there are a whole range of visas with permanent status attached. So these people will be able then, when they've got this resolution of status visa, they will be permanent residents in the country. They can apply for citizenship, and most importantly, they can apply for family reunion. I mean, it's been heartbreaking. A lot of these people haven't seen their families for 10 years. There are mothers and fathers separated from kids. There are kids and single parents in camps, some of the most awful places in the world, hoping and waiting one day to be reunited. So that's the good news. There is a dark side, of course, in that refugee policy is a total mess in this country. Home Affairs has been a disaster, as we know from the previous government. And so who's going to miss out? Well, there were 31,000 people who came by boat before 2013. And those people were in Australia. So there's 12,000 people who are still waiting for a visa, so for a temporary visa or a SHEV. Now, some of those people are in the courts. There's over 8,000 people, cases in the courts, waiting for a hearing. The federal court is totally blocked up. A lot of the people we know don't even have a court date. Then there are others who are waiting at the AAT, that's the tribunal, which I hear today, new Attorney General, Minister Dreyfus, has determined the tribunal, the AAT tribunal, is going to be disbanded. It has been totally discredited. It's nothing more than a retirement home for failed politicians and failed LNP staffers amidst some qualified legal people. So it's a mixture of good people who know what it is to be a tribunal member making a serious decision about a refugee's claim, and this mob of people who get this $450,000 a year job when they fail in the LNP party. And so the way that it's being solved by the Labor government, they are disbanding the AAT and setting up a new process, which needs to happen. So that's welcome. But in the meantime, you've got these thousands of people who are in limbo because they've got gone through a failed AAT process. They are in the courts, which are chock-a-block. So that's the 31,000 who came 10 years ago. Amidst that 31,000 are the people who arrived on Christmas Island when the Labor government, the then Labor government, reinstated the offshore process. Now, what happened was people were randomly selected. It was as random as the 18-year-olds being selected on their birth dates to go to Vietnam. A horrible process. So what happened is 1,146 people, are they transitory persons, we call them, or we don't, the legal system calls them, and they are in Australia because they were sent to Nauru and Manus, and then they were transferred back here. Some under Medivac, a small number under Medivac, others for a whole range of reasons, mainly medical care. Now, they have been sitting in Australia. Half of them are on community detention. That means they have a house, they have to sleep in it, they have a curfew, they get a small amount of money. Their children, once they turn 18, are not allowed to study. They themselves are not allowed to study or work. So they're living in community detention in the community, on the absolute margin. The other half were given bridging visas. But those bridging visas gave them work rights, but no support. So they, if they don't have a job, they don't eat and they don't have shelter. And what's happened is the community groups like the Brigidines and the ASRC and various small groups around Australia have supported those people the Brigidines have paid their rent, pay their utilities and make sure that they've got food to eat. It is really appalling that the government has just stepped away from those people. They are asylum seekers. They're in the community. They were, some of them were, the 1,146 were found to be refugees in Nauru and Manus by Australian officials. They will, the Department of Immigration will say that was an overseas process by Nauru and Manus, but the fact is it was our officials who went over, determined they were refugees, and they are living in limbo. They're really in a mess. So we've got 19,000 are getting the visas and status, permanent status, but then we've got another 12,000 waiting in the wings for a flawed process. We've got this 1,146 transitory persons who've got no rights at all, no rights. And then we've got 2,000 lost souls who are out there in the community doing cash-in-hand work. They have no visa, no rights. They are absolutely lost in a failed system. I'm sorry to keep adding numbers, but then we've got another 900. These are people who've been here 10 years. Can you imagine? 10 years ago they arrived and they are still waiting for a primary decision. That's the first decision from the Immigration Department. Some of that number have not even had an interview. That is how chaotic and flawed the whole system is. We welcome the fact that 19,000 are getting permanent status, but we know that as advocates, we've got a big job ahead of us. We are not out of the woods. We've got all these people living in limbo land. We've got kids who've graduated from school, got scholarships to university to study. And the department steps in with the bridging visa that you have to renew these every 6 months and puts no study rights on the visa. So these kids are effectively cut off from ever having a future. I've got young friends, women, who want to do aged care certificates. I mean, it's a grade 3 aged care certificate, and they're not allowed to do that study, to get that certificate, to do aged care. Here we are crying out for people to do this specialised work of aged care, and we've got women who would love to do that work blocked. You know, Australia is cutting its nose off to spite itself. I hope I haven't confused with all these numbers, but the core issue is the problem is not over. The system is a mess, and we've got, you look at the Labor Party who kept their promise, and what did I see? Last night, the lead issue on the ABC News, vote surge.
Yeah, I actually saw the news yesterday, and it was exactly like that.
Yeah, I'd be interested in your opinion on this, Pamela, because in theory, state and federal government bureaucracies are meant to be apolitical. They are not meant to take sides in politics, but we've got Border Force very publicly talking about sending a surge of people to make sure there's not a wave of new boats, and if there is, we've got capacity to kind of turn them back and stop them. And is this, in your opinion, does this represent a politicisation of a public body where it's basically playing this liberal stop-the-boats hysteria line?
Yes. The word hysteria you used in the previous round of militarisation, and it is absolutely apt. There is hysteria. You can see why Labor are so nervous about making change, because they've got not only the politics, they've also got mainstream media, the crazy media, united. The only thing the LNP can fight on at the moment, because they've made such a mess of government for the last 9 years, is to scream about boats. They created the hysteria. We don't even talk about people. We don't talk about refugees. We talk about a boat. It is a sort of symbol of fear. And this is why I believe we need a Royal Commission. I know we've had a million Royal Commissions in things, but look at RoboDebt. How was that allowed to continue? Not only was it illegal, it was cruel, it was killing people, and it's only with a Royal Commission that the full force brutality comes through. And I think in the long run, the only way we'll turn this policy around, and we need to turn it around, this is not who a lot of Australians want to be, is to look, put the lens on the cruelty. I mean, look at the deaths in detention. Look at the people who died offshore because they couldn't get medical care. These are really shameful things that have happened. Look at the current persecution of people on temporary visas and chefs and people who've got no visa. So in the long run, it's been politicised. It's so toxic. You need a Royal Commission to unpack it. But in the meantime, that's not going to happen in a hurry. We advocates have to keep our shoulder to the wheel. We can't let the public think, oh, they gave 19,000 visas, it's all over. We can't let them think that, because it is not. We are face to face with people who are suffering in Australia every day because their claims haven't been settled, they haven't been recognised. We look, where are the boats likely to come from? Well, Sri Lanka. Let's face it. It's out there in the ocean. It's supposed, it's a nasty 3-week trip. But those people in Sri Lanka, I'm hearing from my Sri Lankan friends that the torture of Tamils started again. Vans picking up people. There are very good reasons why people want to get out of Sri Lanka. They're not only the economic reasons, they're the politics. So, of course, our border forces out there combing the ocean. But at the same time, you've got this story that somehow those people who are desperate to survive know the intricacies of the immigration system. Even Australians don't know the intricacies, and that they know that if you come to Australia, you might one day get a permanent visa, so they're going to get on a boat. It is total hysteria. It doesn't make sense. On one way, we're happy that we got the 19,000. We want to see it happen. It'll take 12 months. Oh, one important thing people need to know is there is no need for those 19,000 to go to immigration agents and pay heaps of money, thousands of dollars. There is no need for them to pay to get these ROS visas. These visas, they will need legal assistance. They can get it through Refugee Legal, through the ASRC. They're free services. They're qualified, experienced lawyers. And they should seek legal advice before they fill in the papers, because it's supposed to be a simple process, but as we know with immigration, it can get very fraught. It can get muddled up. So the message I give to people is you don't have to pay. There are free services. Refugee Legal is lined up, ready to assist people, and they should avail themselves of that service, especially those from New South Wales, from South Australia and Victoria, Refugee Legal, and then in New South Wales, RACS, and the other states are lining up so that there will be free legal assistance for everybody.
And I want to go into, guess, the next kind of the next sort of angle. I've known that you've been commenting, I guess, on this. But I guess, what can you tell us a bit about, you know, this new $420 million contract that the ALP government has undertaken for the offshore detention centre in Nauru? And actually, probably one thing that would be useful, if you obviously have knowledge of it, is what is really the current context around offshore detention centres? Because from my understanding, and I guess a lot of common sort of understanding, a lot of these offshore detention centres are, in a sense, essentially closed. But of course, the fact that the government is, you know, basically has renewed a certain contract means that there is possibly plans to use it again. What is the comments on the complexity of some of that situation right now?
I wish I could tell you. I don't think anybody understands why. We know that the Labor government is nervous, and they will not close the offshore centres. They've got them on so-called standby. There's nobody actually in a locked camp in Nauru at the moment. And, of course, we know that the PNG one was found illegal, so they can't go back there. But they're afraid to close it down, and that's why another reason why I think we need a Royal Commission, because although there have been a lot of reports and a lot of information, Australian people don't realise the full cruelty of the offshore system. What those people were put through, it needs to be exposed to the open air, because nobody could understand that an Australian government could do this to people. The worry about the Nauru situation is, are they going to keep victims there, just, you know, political victims, to say that it's still open? It's sort of pointless. The escape from offshore is supposed to be provided through third country. We've heard this all the time. I would say there are no third countries anymore. You look at the 1,200-person deal to America. They've still got 200 places. Nobody's gone to America since December. Even then it was two people. So the idea of sending people to the United States is pretty much dead. They're just keeping it there as an option. Canada, 11 people have gone to Canada. Those people who went to Canada got there by virtue of the generosity of community groups here. I know of one group, they raised $40,000 to get a family to Canada, and God bless them for doing it. But it's not possible for people to raise that amount of money. It's also very clear the Canadians are not going to take Australia's refugees. So that's Canada. And then the third option is New Zealand. Well, we've seen a handful get to New Zealand. I think there were five or six over Christmas, and a couple more in January. The New Zealand deal is not yet completely operational. We don't know what's going to happen. And in any case, it's only 150 a year. You've heard the numbers of people we've got in our community and the numbers offshore. There aren't enough places in New Zealand. They've said they will take 150 a year for 4 years. That's 600 people. I mean, it's horrible to talk about people like commodities, but the fact is Australia has a responsibility to the refugees who came here, and we've got to face up to it.
And as you've pointed out, refugees are workers, and, like, we need workers. Like, it's
especially having a law that denies people the right to work.
Yeah, it's purely about scapegoating a section of the population to sort of whip up nationalism and strike fear into the rest of the population. Like, you behave yourselves because we're capable of being pretty nasty.
Yes, and people do know that, and that's why it's important for us to spread the word amongst ordinary Australians. I mean, the more people get to know refugee families and work alongside them, they go to school with their kids, and then they sit down and have a cup of tea and listen to their stories. And I hear people, how could this be? How could we have done this to people? Well, it's, you know, to me, it's a scandal on a scale with the stolen children generation. I'm old enough. That was happening in my lifetime. It is shocking to think that in 1996 we finally got a Royal Commission, and it still has taken all these years to open people's eyes to what we did to Aboriginal children and families. Why? Based on their colour. You know, it is.
And this is the same. It's all about skin colour.
Yeah, yeah. It's about you're not one of us. Mm. You're another nationality. You know, the first and the last people in this country have been victimised politically, and it's time it stopped.
Absolutely.
And we'll probably got a bit now out of time now, but this has been a fantastic interview, Pamela. I think you've given us a lot of useful kind of information in terms of unpacking the announcement, especially since this is kind of a discussion that's very much not even getting reported in the media. In fact, you know, I even read an article in The Guardian about this announcement, and even The Guardian, you know, which is generally quite progressive on this issue, didn't even sort of make mention of all these sort of nuances and sort of detail about who was excluded from this announcement and all these other aspects. But I guess I want to hear your kind of final comments, especially in terms of the implications this might have for refugee activists, this new announcement. I mean, you've sort of implied that, you know, there should be a demand for a Royal Commission. But what are some of the other sort of demands, that people need to be looking towards? I mean, obviously the refugee movement is pretty clear on the question of, you know, abolishing the boat turn back policy, etc. Those are all important issues, obviously, as well. But obviously this announcement also has lots of implications in terms of campaigners as well.
Look, the mainstream media, this is secret business. You see that the Murdoch media get their information direct from Home Affairs and Border Force PR releases. It's really hard to unpack all this information. I guess I'd say to the activist and advocacy community, our fight is not over. We've got Palm Sunday coming up on the 2nd of April. That's the biggest refugee rally of the year. It brings together a whole range of people from the activist community, from the church communities, from the faith communities, and from the refugee communities. So I'd say be there, be counted. The other thing that's coming up later in the year is the Labor conference in Brisbane in August, I believe. That's where policy is made. We need to be sitting down and working out what, with the refugees and with the asylum seekers, what are the things that are important to them, and taking that to the conference as best we can through the unions, through the delegates. I'd like to say our fight is over. It's not. If we care, we've got to stand up and be counted still. And the gains we've made have only been made because activists and advocates have been out on the streets, have been in the minister's office, have been advocating through their political affiliations. These things have only happened because of your fight, and we've got to keep it up.
All right. Thank you very much, Pamela. I think this has been a very good interview in terms of unpacking the recent Albanese announcement, refugee announcement.
Yeah, thanks, Pamela.
Thank you. Goodbye.